Welcome to the Labrador podcast from Tales of Success Labrador Training. In this episode, I'm joined by Karen. She's going to talk to us about her experiences with her own Labrador and tell us about the reality of living with a dog that suffers from anxieties. Helping any dog with anxieties is not an easy ride, and Beau is incredibly lucky to have Karen in her corner to help her cope. I hope you enjoy this episode. Karen, hello to you. A massive, massive thank you for joining us to share your story about Beau. I want you to start us off by giving our listeners a quick 30-second rundown of Beau so they can make this mental picture of who it is that we're going to be talking about today.
So Beau is a red lab. She's 15 months old. She is full of fun and mischievousness. But is also incredibly sound sensitive, so around traffic and things like that, and it makes our life can be challenging in lots of ways. But yeah, she is full of lots of bundles of energy, whether that be bouncing or, you know, nervousness.
Good, thank you. Where would you say Beau is at her happiest? So you've just touched upon sound sensitivity, so we won't talk about that. Let's talk about the good stuff to start with. So where is she when she has kind of got the biggest smile on her face, enjoying herself?
Well, I would say the biggest smile on her face is with her sisters. So we're quite fortunate because my brother took two dogs from the same litter. So she has two sisters, her litter mates, that we often walk with, or we go to their house or they come to ours. So she is happiest with them, playing with them, because they are just like her, same size, because she's not a big lab. She's only about 23 kilograms. So she's not a big lab, and they are the same play way. They like to run and you know jump about, but not too rough, so just like her, really. There's like three peas in a pod. That's where she's at her happiest. Or at home annoying Coco the cat. Now that is one of her favorite things to do. Coco would not say it's that fun. It's very rare she ever barks or anything like that. You know, she's quite a quiet dog, but if she wants to get Coco going, she would bark at Coco if Coco was ignoring her and not trying to put her in her place. I'd say at home annoying the cat or with her sisters are her two happy places.
That relationship she's got with Coco, does she essentially think that Coco is there to be her kind of playmate? Does she just want a new kind of playmate in the house?
Definitely. She would love another dog. She thinks Coco is another dog, and she thinks that when Coco swipes her, like particularly with a double paw swipe, that's her favorite thing. So, you know, she thinks that's her playing. And if you spoke cat language, I don't know if it would be repeatable on a podcast, but Coco's definitely not playing.
And you mentioned that she's kind of at her happiest when she's got her two siblings. So your brother owns two from the same litter. Are they a similar kind of personality, temperament? Could you tell that they're sisters, or are they very, very different?
You can tell they're sisters. They've all got a little bit of an anxiousness, but Lexi and Indy are together, so they seem to bound off each other. There's differences between those two as well. Indy's much more wary of strangers, and Lexi's a much more people person, so she would be very close to people. But at the same time, when you see them playing, they play in a very similar way. So they will chase each other around, and they sniff, and they love jumping on, you know, on logs and in woods and things like that. So yeah, they are very similar. You can see they are sisters, you know. You can definitely see they're all, you know, all from this, that people will say, I think we're from the same litter. Wow. You know, yeah, but at the same time, they have each got their own intrinsic personalities. None of the other two, Lexi and Indy, don't have the level of anxiety that Beau has. They have got parts of it, but not to the point it cripples them. So now whether that's Beau's on her own, I don't know whether she would have been different if she'd have had a sibling from the get-go. But yeah, they are similar, but with slight differences.
I think it's always amazing when you get a whole litter of pups how each of them can be so, so unique. And I think a lot of people just assume all puppies are the same, but actually they grow into be very different creatures without too much intervention. So that's where Beau's at her happiest. From your point of view, what is the best thing about having Beau in your life? Kind of what makes you smile on a daily basis when you see that girl?
So Beau is full of love. It doesn't matter what kind of day you've had, what the weather's like outside. You come home, and I'm sure all Labrador owners, and actually probably all dog owners, that's why you have a dog. You come home because no matter what, they are pleased to see you. They've always got love for you. And the time we spend outside and what we've done, what I've done with Bo, and the time I've put in, the effort I've seen her grow, that's where I'm at my happiest. When she comes home, it doesn't matter, like I said, what my day's been like, how bad you've had a bad drive home and it took me 3 hours. As soon as I come through the door, that tail's wagging and, you know, she's found me a toy or my slipper, you know, that's a favourite one, or somebody's sock or something off the washing line, you know. But she's bringing it to me to say, look what I've got, you're home, Mum, you're home. Oh, thank the Lord. You know, and there's nothing like it.
It's that unconditional love that you just get greeted with every time. I mean, is Bo your first dog, or have you had previous experience with dogs, whether that's as family pets or, you know, when you're a kid, that kind of stuff?
I've had dogs my whole life. From being born, my parents had dogs before I was born. And my dad is a big part of my life, and she's a big part of Bo's life as well. He has a real affinity with dogs. Like, you know, locally they call him like the dog whisperer. He's never had proper formal training. Whatever dog he's had, he's always been under he calls it martial law. Like, but he's always done amazing things with dogs that are his own. So even as a kid, as growing up, my favorite childhood memories are of me, my brother, and my dad, and we're walking through the woods, and my dad would do silly games. We'd have the dogs with us. And it would always be outside time with the dog, and all of our holidays. So we never went abroad when I was young. We only went on camping holidays, and we only went on holidays where the dog came, because the dogs were part of the family. They never went in kennels. They never were looked after by anybody else. The dogs came with us. So that was our upbringing. And then it's obviously shaped both mine and my brother's life going forward, because we both had dogs in and out. You know, I think I've had a period of about 2 or 3 years without a dog, and that's it. We've had dogs our whole adult life, you know.
Your dad has very much impacted on kind of you getting a dog and enjoying life with a dog, and I know he still remains a massive part of Bo's life as well. So tell us about that arrangement that you have, because it's kind of almost like shared responsibility for Bo, isn't it, with you and your dad?
It is, yeah. Bo's got double the love, so she's a very lucky puppy. Because when I wanted to get a dog, my situation had changed, and obviously it meant I was working at home, and there'd been, like I say, a couple of years where I'd not had a dog because I was working so many hours, it wasn't fair to take on another dog. And then when COVID came along, and as COVID sort of went out, and my work allowed me to work from home, I knew I was missing a dog. I was missing having somebody on a Saturday morning like this morning to have to get up out of bed because you're going to go for a walk and you're going to feel outside and you're going to spend some time with that dog. So I knew I wanted that, but at the same time I knew I still was going into the office 3 days a week, so it wasn't fair to take on a dog unless my dad was willing to help me. My dad had lost his last dog about 8 or 9 months before, the previous year, and he was devastated. Like, the grief was, because he lives on his own and the dog is a really massive part of his life. All the dogs he's had has been a massive part of his life. So I said to him, look, you know, I know people that have got puppies and I'm thinking about getting one. And he was like, yeah. I said to him, but if I need your help, and he was like, yeah, this is perfect for me. So he picks Bo up at about 9:30 every day, and he has her on the days I go to the office, and he has her till about 3:30 and brings her home. So he's 75 this year, so he has been able to enjoy bringing Bo up but not with the long-term commitment or the financial commitment as well. So that was another thing that was a worry for him. That's why he said he'd never get another dog. But he's now able to do that. When we said to him he needed a dog when he first lost, he's like, no, because, you know, I'm going to be 80 in a few years and I can't guarantee I'll always be able to walk a dog, and I would never take a dog on that I would not be able to care for, that would be left to someone else if I passed away. So we've found this perfect blend of mixed. So Bo has a granddad who picks her up, and it's been really lovely. It's been lovely for him and it's been lovely for Bo, and it sort of obviously means I can have, you know, that I can have a dog in my life and still be a full-time worker.
It's brilliant. And I bet Bo really keeps your dad on his toes during the day. I bet they have a lot of fun together.
Definitely. There are days I get a phone call for Bo, whatever Bo's been up to, every night from my dad. And there are some days, oh, she's been so good today. She's been a pleasure today. And then other days he'll say, oh, she's been an absolute hooligan today. And I think, oh, okay. But either day, he's never on his own. And the day's gone by. So he's given him company. And yeah, so, and I know he wouldn't be without her, you know.
I think for the both of you that look after him, would you say that either of you or both of you have done things differently with Bo compared to, I don't know, maybe dogs that you had as kids? So things like caring for, training, do you do things slightly differently as your knowledge has evolved and bits and pieces online are there to help people?
I definitely do. I don't know about my dad. I think my dad has his set, you know, he's in his 70s and he's had dogs his whole life. So he had his own way of things that he thought were important to train Bo on or standards Bo had to keep. But for me, definitely, I found YouTube and Instagram like amazing when I look back to getting a dog. So for once I'd picked Bo, I spent sort of the 8 weeks from knowing I was having her till her coming, I spent them just really researching like about different training styles, and it opened up my eyes massively to just what even as a non, I'd call myself as a novice, I'm not a dog trainer, I'm not an expert, but I feel like I know so much. And then, you know, and then obviously we picked up with you guys and we train with tails and that has been then widened everything I now know about dog training and understanding dogs as well, understanding how a dog works and their body language and, you know, yeah, keeping things simple so that they can follow what you expect from them. Yeah, so that's definitely very different to any other dog I've ever had before. So,
and I think
that dog, she has had hours in me, hours and hours of training.
I think as our knowledge gets greater, kind of as a population, we know more about dogs, we understand them a bit more. It's really critical to have a really solid understanding of how dogs learn, how their brain works, what their motivations are. And that definitely helps us with any aspect of training them to do anything, really. Talk to us about your daily or weekly training schedule with Bo. Do you still have things that you work on every time you go out? Have you got a set type of training that you do with her?
Yeah, we have things we work on every time we go out. Every time we are off lead, we work on recall. That is just something I never ever ever stop working on. Recall, when we go out, we'll work on scent training, we'll work on things like middle touch, we're starting to put a bit of agility into her training. So depending on where I am, but if we're near a wall, I'll make her, and it's not somebody's house, you know, because people don't like that, but you know, if you're near a public wall, like, you know, if she'll either have to do her paws up to find a treat, or she'll have to jump onto the wall if the wall's low enough. So we work on all kinds of things. It's just really to build her interaction with me. I think that's probably the one thing I work on, is her interaction and focus on me on every single walk when we are out, whether that be on lead or off lead. That is just continual, you know.
And I think that's important, because it shouldn't just be seen as training that you've got to do. It's actually just about building a bond, building a relationship, and having fun with your dog. It's much better for them to be looking at you rather than all of those distractions. So anything you can do, this goes for everyone, anything you can do just to keep your dog's focus and attention and have fun, do it. You're not going to do any harm by having fun in your training. Aaron, what are your top five skills that you work on as part of your training schedule? So you've already mentioned things about recall, trying to get Bo's focus. What are your top five most important things to look at?
So I would say for anyone with any Labrador or any dog, I think, as I said to you, recall is the most important skill. And like, I do think this is because dogs, like a dog that's well behaved at home, needs to be well exercised. And to be truly well exercised, you've got to be able to let your dog off lead, you know. And I appreciate there are people that live with dogs that aren't able to do that, or they live with long lines, which is obviously a good mix of the two. But for me, to be sure that Bo will be able to cope with things at home or the walk home, she needs to be well exercised. So the fact that I can let her off lead and she can sniff and move about woods, and she does meet other dogs and has positive interactions when we're outside. That is important. And recall, because she has a good recall, and no dog's recall is ever 100%, and it can fail at any time for any reason. But because I would say her recall is sort of 90% there, it means that I can exercise her and wear her out to a point that she, it makes her life easier at home. The second one, as I said, she was like, focus on me. It's like, we, although I allow her to play with other dogs that we know, I try not to let her to go up to dogs we don't know. She never ever goes up to a dog that's on a lead. And then a lot of our walks will be just me and her. So we have walked this morning for 4 miles and she has not seen another soul. So during that time, it's just me and her. We've been out for an hour and a half. So I have to entertain her with scent training and things like that so that she actually is happy to spend an hour and a half with me. My third thing I would say is like remaining calm around distractions. So like, she is a teenage Labrador and she is a people person and a dog person. So although when she meets other dogs and she's off lead, she's actually very polite. If she's on lead, I don't know, there's something, she'll just want to jump up, or she'll, you know, she'll, the excitement will build in her if there's another dog on a lead. So one of the things we work on every walk is it, when she goes back on a lead, if another dog comes up, she has to sit and let them pass. If we're on a path, she has to let families go past. That's something we work on all the time, because I just think it's important. And it's politeness as well, you know. So if we're walking down a street and there's people coming up with a buggy, Bo would have to sit and wait, and, you know, and I'll say to them, no, come by, you know, or someone else with a dog, another dog, will make her sit and wait. So calm around distractions, that's something I work on quite a bit with her. That then leads to then being calm at home. So that'd be my first, my fourth thing I would say would be settle. So the settle training we did in your original puppy class that we did, and we have a, she has a mat, which we sometimes take out with us, but actually she just knows that when she's told to sit and lay down, that's kind of what she has to do. Now, it doesn't happen all the time, of course it doesn't, she is a teenage Labrador, but at the same time, if people come to the house, I would just keep redirecting her back to her bed. This is where you've got to stay, this is where you've got to stay, this is where you've got to stay. And it's normally the first 5-10 minutes when people are first here that she's really excited, and because we don't get that many people come, so she's a bit like, oh my god, people in my house. But that's something we work on quite a bit, is remaining settled at home. And then the last thing, it links really to her anxiety, and that is making positive experiences when we are outside, because as I've said, she is very sound sensitive. And that is a constant battle, because I don't have control over the external environment that is going to impact her, and I don't have a crystal ball. So I can't always tell if it's going to go well or not go well. And some of her anxieties that she now has, I believe I've triggered, because I've, in an attempt to try and overcome her sound sensitive anxiety, and then something bad goes wrong during that session, and then that's it, you go backwards. But that's something we work on all the time. So we might do that from the back garden when we can hear bikes and things like that working about, like driving about. So I've just recently bought her a little agility set to go in the back garden, so that's something we work on. We might go in the front garden, or we try to do some walks around the streets. Now that doesn't always go so well, but that's what we work on all the time.
We'll touch upon that sound sensitivity in just a moment. Prior to doing that, you mentioned that top of your list was recall, right? I would always say to people that recall for me is the most important thing to teach any dog, because if we can't get them back, it is absolutely pointless teaching them anything else, because they're running across the other side of the field. And I like to do that having lots of different ways to get your dog to come back to you, whether it's calling them, whether it's blowing a whistle, giving them a visual clue, or giving them a job to do when they come back. So out of those things, which ones are your kind of favoured recall methods? What works well for you? Because I know you've done our scent detection program, and you've started using scent as a way to incentivize Bo to come back to you as well. Is that right?
Yeah. So we did whistle training, which I did with you as well. You taught me whistle training. And then we did your scent program. And I use that scent pot is in my pocket the whole way around. There's never a day I go out without the scent pot. And yeah, I will hi, she'll be off sniffing and I'll blow my whistle. I'll say, Bo, come. And she will come and then I'll tell her to search. So she will look for the cue. And straight away, she's on her way back. And it's just, it actually pairs recall and focus, because I'm making me interesting and not the other dog or the child running up the road, or, you know, like I have the good stuff here, you know, I have the fun. And she loves the scent training. It's probably the best thing we did with you by a long way, like, because I use it every single day. There is not a day I don't use it. So I use it I use it outside more than I use it inside, because I use it on every walk. In the house, if she's anxious, the scent pot will come out as well. So that'll be another, you know, we'll do it in the house as well, just to distract her. But outside, it is part of our recall and it is part of our focus really on me. So yeah.
Do you find that
highly recommend it?
Thank you. Do you find that Bo copes better when we're turning tasks that we set are almost into a job or have real purpose to it? Because she is from a working line. I appreciate she's a family pet, but does she like having jobs to do, whether it's scent training or, you know, setting her tasks that she's got to complete?
She loves having tasks to do, like a job to do. That is, she, you can see in her body language that she loves it. Yeah, tail up in the air, ears up, she's bouncing, there's a different way to her walk, her head's held up. I can see straight away. So I call her back and we do scent training. We do touch, like a hand touch, so we do a low one, and sometimes I'll do a high one, so she has to sort of run back to me and then she has to sort of jump a little bit up just to touch her nose, to touch my hand. You can just see she knows she's coming back to do something, and she's bounding. Middle's her favorite one, because whatever she does she then ends on a middle, because she has to, she loves the middle so much. But we obviously do the around, we did the around, which we learned with you, where we send her around an object, which we learnt with in your puppy class, and now we're doing that up on an object and over an object. So we come across a log, I'll call her back, I'll point to the log, I'll tell her up and she'll be straight up, and she's for the treat and she's waiting for the reward. So you can see that pleasure in her body language, you know, all the time. I see that. Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
loves having a job to do, however small it is. Would you say you follow a particular training plan or a training style or particular method to the training that you do with Bo?
Well, I don't know if it's a training style. I suppose it's positive reinforcement and it's food-based reward. So ever since Bo was a puppy, she's, her full daily intake of food has never been given to her all in a bowl. I always set a certain amount aside for training. So she does have a bowl morning and night of food, but she will have sort of, you know, a small amount of that. 15% of that will go in my training bag when she gets a job to do throughout the walk or I'll recall her. And then when she comes back, she gets a little bit of kibble. So I suppose it's food-based reward, and she gets a fuss as well. She would come back just for the fuss. I do a hand touch with her and I'll crouch low, like, so she'll know, like, you know, I'm low, I'm calling her out, my hand's out. And she'll come back so quick because it's like she's not just getting the food. I'm low enough to get a cuddle from and to fuss her. So I don't know if there's a professional. It probably is food-based and positive reinforcement. But that's what we use and that's what works for us is, you know.
Could you imagine? So Bo's what, 15 months, is that right?
Yeah.
Could you imagine what she would be like if you'd done no training with her at all? What would life be like?
I think granddad might have her because she would be a hooligan every day, not just on the worst day. So, I couldn't. And, you know, the training is not just so that you have a dog that's good for you and your family, which is important. Like, you know, your dog is a part of your family. But actually training is good for you personally because you get, as an owner, you get something out of it. Like, you've put hours in and then you get something out. And I appreciate, and I know lots of, we're on your acceleration program. So I obviously know lots of other Labrador owners through you, Vicky. And I know that it doesn't always go like that. It doesn't always mean some owners put so much time in and it doesn't go right. And it can be frustrating and upsetting. And But when it does go right, it is complete success. And I saw a meme that actually captured it, which was like, name the most important things in your world. It was like money, status, which was like money was like 2%, status was like 5%, like your dog coming when it was called was like 80%, because it was like, it is a big thing. It's like, you're not a dog owner, you don't know, but you call your dog and it comes, you're like, oh yeah. So
it's no accident that this stuff happens. You know, you've put an awful lot of time and effort and energy into Bo, and it does pay off in the end. It really does. And sometimes you don't notice how much it's paying off as you're going through the process of teaching your dog. It's only when you kind of have that consistent, reliable behavior at the end where you think, actually, yeah, all those little bits of moments and time that I put into it have just slowly chipped away and we've got the end result that we wanted. And it's so important just to keep going when you're training a dog, because it's not a 5-week event that happens when they're a puppy. It is actually a lifelong commitment that you've got with your dog for as far as training goes. Let's talk about outside of training. We've kind of already alluded to the fact that we've got some, I'm going to call them challenges with Bo. So anxiety is noise sensitivity. We've both kind of mentioned those words already. When you were thinking about bringing Bo home 15 months ago, you probably had a picture in your mind of what life was going to be like. And it may be actually that you're living a different life now. So is the reality of owning Bo different from maybe how you perceived it would be?
Yeah, definitely. 100%. So for all the amazing things the internet can do for training, helping you with dog training, there's loads of free, amazing resources online on YouTube, Instagram. There is also loads and loads of images and videos of perfect life with perfect Labradors or dogs. And the reality is, like, it for most people I know, it's not like that. All dogs have challenges, and Bo's challenges impact us on a daily basis. So when I imagined getting Bo, I wanted a dog that I took everywhere with me. You know, if I walked to my local Morrison's half a mile up the road, I wanted to be able to walk there and, you know, pop my daughter outside while she held the Labrador and then we walked home. But the reality is that Bo could not manage the road. She just couldn't manage it. We've tried it, and you know, she can't cope with it. So I wanted a dog I could take to cafes, and yeah, I imagined a dog that was going to be comfortable and confident in all situations. And yeah, that's not Bo, and we then have to adapt our life to Bo, and yeah, our reality is different to what I believed it would be, because that's what I saw on Instagram. That's how I remembered. You know, I didn't think that it would be so difficult, but yeah, for Bo there are things that she finds very difficult.
So tell us about those. What would you say those big challenges are that you've faced with Bo, and how are you tackling it?
Right, so the biggest her main thing is the fact that she's so sound sensitive. She is an anxious dog. She's always wary of the new, or something. If something goes wrong in a certain space, she'll be a bit wary of going there. However, the one thing that cripples her is sound sensitivity. So heavy traffic, particularly motorbikes and souped up cars. And we live in a very urban town, and they are everywhere. They are, it's a Saturday today, and I guarantee by this afternoon, from our house, we will hear cars and bikes driving up and down. And There is an area that the sound carries from that they race, and it really sounds like Silverstone sometimes. And so for Bo, that is a real trigger. We've lived with this since I've had her. She's always been wary and anxious around car sounds. When she was a very early puppy, I managed to get her out of it by about 16 weeks. And then we had an incident on a road that frightened her. And then that was when we joined your Tales of Success Acceleration Program, and we worked with you, and we did lots and lots of things at that point. Scatter feeding, so I would take Bo out, I would get her to a grass patch, I would throw some food, so as cars were going by, she's sniffing and doing a scatter feed. And that was how it was drip feeding and desensitizing her. And at that point she was probably about 5 months. And we got to a point where we could go locally around, you know, a distance, as long as we weren't by the road that was too busy. And gradually over time, over the next 4 months, and it was 4 months of regular, every evening, we would go out for 15, 20 minutes and we would do a lap, and then we kept alternating the route and just making it wider and wider and closer to the road, till I would say that she was doing so, so well. She was doing amazingly well. And then one Saturday on my trip to Morrison's that I'd imagined would be so perfect to be able to walk her to Morrison's. So we walked to Morrison's and she walked up the really, really busy road that she found, you know, she wasn't comfortable, but she wasn't an anxious basket case. And then during the trip on a pedestrian crossing, a guy in a souped up car decided to rev his engine while we were right next to the car, and that was it, game over. And then with fireworks and night and Diwali a couple of weeks later, we started a spiral, and we, in an attempt to try and prepare her for fireworks night, I was taking her out in the afternoon so that she would be tired for the evening. We were out on a field and some kids came driving along on a motorbike while she was off lead, and this was all in the space of a month. So in my attempt to desensitize her, I exposed her to sounds that put her back, and we're now at a point where I can't avoid those places, but at the same time I'm trying to make it so that we can live with it. And it means that Bo can come on holiday with us, and she's not gonna not want to leave her crate during the day when they're driving their, you know, bikes around. So it's very difficult, and it impacts everything we do, everything I do with her now. It impacts really, because I can't predict when it's going to be a bad time to go out, because, you know, people have a right to drive their cars. Much as I can think, oh yeah, it'll be quieter in the morning, we went out Easter morning and I thought it'd be really quiet at 8 o'clock in the morning, and it turns out there was a car show or a bike show, and a load of them were traveling near a road that we were on. And you know, yeah, again, you're like, oh, you feel like you failed your dog. I work with her every day in trying to desensitize her, but in a point where she won't get too stressed. However, that doesn't always happen, and then you have to manage when she does get to that point. You have to manage how you're going to get her home, because at times she won't want to walk. She will refuse to walk. If she thinks there's something scary ahead of her, she will just sit and shake, or she will lay on the floor and shake. And then when she is home, it's then just resetting her and letting her know you're home, you're safe, it's done, you know. So over the months, she's got better at resetting. When we come in the house, she'll straight away, even if she's been shaking right outside, she'll come in the house and straight away, as soon as that door shut, you'll see her tail go up and she'll almost shake off like, phew, I'm alive, I made it back. It is difficult though. It's not, if you have a dog with any level of anxiety, it's really hard to know whether you're doing the right thing. That's the other thing that's really hard. And people tell you all the time, people want to stop me in the street and tell me what I should or shouldn't do, or tell me on a dog walk what I should or shouldn't do. Oh, you know, just take her to, you know, just keep taking her to a road. Just keep taking her to a road. Well, yeah, I have kind of tried that. Do you know what I mean? Like, I have tried. And I think it's like that age old saying, and it probably could be, adaptable for anybody in any training situation with a dog, is actually you kind of want to say to people, walk a mile in my shoes. So I don't have a reactive dog. I'm very lucky that Bo is very, very submissive and does not react to people or other dogs. So I can't give anyone with a reactive dog advice, because I'm not doing that every day. And it's the same with me. It's like my dog is incredibly anxious around traffic sounds, and actually you don't know what I've done, and so you don't need to stop me and give me, much as your opinion is, it's nice that you've tried to help, you're not helping me. You're, and another one that I think people say to me, they pick it up off you, and I think to myself, oh, I've tried everything from yanking her along a road to stopping, to ignoring her, to, you know, if I'm giving off some level of anxiety, I don't know how I'm doing it. And then that's quite tough then, when people want to tell you that the dog's picking it up off you. because you already feel like you've let the dog down because you've had a bad day. You took your dog somewhere that she's now at a point where she is shaking. She's got her tail tucked under, her head bowed down. She's licking and she's practically panting. So you don't need to be the dog whisperer to know that your dog's incredibly stressed. So if you then, you already feel like that's your fault without somebody saying, oh yeah, they picked it up off you. Mm-hmm. It's very, very difficult.
What would you say motivates you to keep carrying on then? Because it sounds like it's difficult for you daily. And probably a lot of people would have gone at this point, you know, I can't help my dog. I've got an anxious, noise sensitive dog. We've got to live with it. But you're a bit different from that, Karen. I know full well that every day you're wanting to help Bo. What is your motivation for doing that?
Well, we obviously have got some level of acceptance that this is she is how she is, that I, you know, but at the same time, I don't want to have to leave Bo with anyone else when I go on holiday. Like, so we go away every year and I want Bo to be able to come with us. And I want Bo to be able to enjoy a life outside. And I also don't want her to be scared in her own house. So it's just a case of like, we keep working on it, even if we're not getting all the results we see, just because I think it's better for Bo to make her happier. You know, if we can ease that anxiety in any way, shape or form, that has got to be better for her than just saying, you know, oh well, this is how she is, so I won't ever walk her down to a field, I'll just put her straight in the car. Because actually, one day when you're down the field, as has happened to me, all of a sudden something happens down the field, you know, because I can't control the outside environment. I can't control the fact that you won't get some young oik on a bike that's going to drive through a dog field, because they do, like, you know, and I've had it happen to me. So it's as much as there is a level of acceptance, as in my imaginary, what I thought it would be like living with a Labrador has changed, because Bo is a different kind of dog and she needs different kind of attention. At the same time, I won't give up on trying to make things a little bit easier for her, so that if we are caught unawares, it's not as traumatic as instances she's already suffered from. So
she's had an awful lot to cope with. You've said about fireworks, you've got Diwali, you've got, you know, all these things that were happening, cars and motorbikes. Do you think there was one particular event or scenario or situation that triggered all this? Or do you actually think Bo is just, that's her makeup, that's how she is, she's a bit noise sensitive and anxious?
I think she is noise sensitive and anxious, definitely. I think that from the get-go, when I look at her and I think back to what it was like when she was even 8 or 12 weeks old, she was always noise sensitive. But I do think we had an incident, the very first incident that really put her back, that wasn't just a puppy being scared of outside, was she was about 16 weeks, like I said, and we were on a road and a dust car and two vans and a car drove past us, and at that point she wanted to bolt. They were very, very close to her. We were on a road that didn't have a path, and I think that sort of really spiraled stuff for her. And then from there, the car in October, all the incidents in October is what's really put the nail in the coffin, because we had overcome it. We had really got her to a place where, as an example would be, when I went on our holiday in August, we got to a service station and Bo wouldn't get out of the car. So we got her out of the car and she jumped straight back in, and she didn't want to go to the toilet. And she'd been in the car 3 hours and she just didn't want to come out. And we had to stop another couple of hours down the road just to let her out to pee, because she was so desperate. So just the week before we had our incident with the idiot on the pedestrian crossing, we'd been to Huddersfield and we pulled into a service station at Huddersfield with big HGVs coming in, and she jumped out of the car and she walked across to the service station fine. And she wouldn't have gone where the HGVs were parked and running their engines. She wouldn't have wanted to be that close, but she did get out of the car and walk across the car park. So I do think that what happened in October really has put her back, but I think it's a mix of both. I wouldn't like to say it was just one event. I think there's been a number of events that have made her how she is, but she also has, I mean, she is an anxious, nervy dog, you know. We had an incident last year where she stopped walking through the living room because, like, through the where my dining room and living room is, she stopped walking to the kitchen through it because she kept skidding. And what she would do is she would then try to run through it at a rate of knots because it was just like, let me get through it. And it's laminate flooring, and of course, you know, dogs and laminate flooring, of course, she was colliding into things. So in her mind, she was thinking, every time I walk through this area, something bad happens to me. And that's not sound, that's just because she's like Calamity Jane as a dog, really. She just sort of collides into things. And then, so she then built up this thing where she wouldn't walk through, and that went on for weeks and weeks. And then eventually she just got over it. So I think she does have a natural nervous disposition, but it has been impacted. That's probably the short, concise answer I should have said. She does have a natural nervous disposition that has been impacted by a couple of significant events in her puppyhood.
With the wonderful benefit of hindsight, you know Bo's character very well now. You know what concerns her, what excites her, what makes her tick. If you were to have your time again, having Bo from that sort of 8-week-old puppy, do you reckon you'd do anything differently?
Yes, I would not. I tried so hard to socialise Bo that I actually think I overexposed her. I overexposed her when she was nervous around sounds. I should have gradually done what I'm doing now of drip feeding sounds and sights to her in a much smaller, bite-sized way rather than trying to take her full on out for walks. My last dog I had was a rescue dog, Molly, and I got her and she was already like 9 months old, so I hadn't gone through that early puppy stage. So I think I just hadn't anticipated how much you had to do to socialize a dog. But do it in small amounts, don't overdo it, like do it in very short, sharp bursts, because I just went full on in thinking, yeah, you've got to expose them to everything, got to make sure they're confident and everything. And actually what I did was I overexposed her, and her residing memory of that is that everything is a bit scary. You know.
And I think that will depend on each individual situation, each individual Labrador. And actually, one of the things you said right at the beginning was that you've got this kind of dream of what a Labrador was going to be like. And, you know, you have this picture of what your life is going to be like with your new puppy. And I think a lot of people will have that same vision of what their life is going to look like. What would you say the biggest misunderstanding about that dream is? So actually having a Labrador compared to the dream that people have in their mind when they have an 8-week-old puppy, how does that differ?
Right, so I would say that every dog is different. So what you see on those Instagram reels and TikTok videos is not necessarily what your Labrador is going to be like. And what works for one dog will not work for every dog. So you've all got, and you have to learn your dog. That would be my biggest thing. You've got to learn you've got to understand your dog's body language, what works for your dog. You need to adapt your training to be like, to strengthen your bond really with your dog, because every dog is different. And just because you see these confident dogs that jump in rivers, because not all dogs are going to want to go in a river. Not all dogs want to go in a puddle. You know, not all dogs want to meet another dog, so all those things you see, it's just remember is that every dog, Labrador, they're all different. Each one has got their own unique personalities, and you need to learn that. And the quicker you learn it, the quicker you can adapt what you expose your dog to, so that you strengthen your bond, you don't weaken it, and actually you have more successful wins with your dog.
And I personally think we need to accept as well that not every dog is perfect. You know, so many times people say to me in our training sessions, my dog would be perfect if, my dog would be perfect if they didn't do this or if they did that. And actually, there is no such thing in the world as perfection. Doesn't exist. I'm not perfect. You're not perfect. Why on earth should we think that our dogs are going to be perfect at everything? They all do have their own quirks. And there is a lot of acceptance that we must kind of take and say, right, well, this is what we got. We can maybe make it better. But we might never get to that perfect Instagram dream dog that, you know, people like to publicize. There will be people listening to this that are struggling with separation anxiety, struggling with reactivity or noise sensitivity. So I just want to say, you're going to have really good days with your dog, whatever issues they've got, but you will have really dreadful weeks. It kind of good days, bad weeks. Karen, from your experience, what advice would you give to someone that's listening to this thinking, am I doing the right thing? Should I be doing something else? Am I the right person for this dog? What would you say to them?
Well, the very fact you're even thinking if you're the right person, you're the right person, first of all, because I felt that definitely thinking, oh, I've made Bo worse. She lives with me. And actually, my brother was the one that put it into words for me because he said, look, no matter who she would be with, she'd be anxious. So, but you actually love her and you're putting the time in. So you are the right person and you will have bad days or bad, like you say, bad weeks or even bad months, but don't give up because like you might, what you get back in return is that dog loves you unconditionally. And I can remember once we were walking Bo on the streets and she was a bit anxious and this old man came up to me and he was absolutely in love with her, fussed her loads, and he said to me, oh, do you know what, they're the only animal that gives you more back than they'll ever receive. So they give you more love than they'll ever get, than you'll ever give them back. And they don't expect it back because they give it to you for free. And I was like, yeah, they are. So just even on the bad days, just remember it's that bond that you've got with your dog is that keep going, don't give up. Because, yeah, you might have a, you know, further down the road, you're going to have a good day. And you're also not alone. That's the other thing, is you are not, like, you are not alone. There is someone else out there, probably me today, having a bad day as well. So, you know, don't give up. Yeah, just remember there is, you know, you're doing this to make them better. And even if you're worried you're not the right person, the very fact you even think it, you are the right person.
Yeah, totally agree with that. And just to echo what you said, reach out and seek help if you need it, because you are not alone. So I'm always here to take messages from people if you want to message me through email, Instagram, whatever it might be. But I also want to ask Karen, would you be prepared to share Bo's Instagram account details, so if people do want to reach out to you, they can do?
Definitely, yeah, definitely, that's not a problem. Because it's very hard when you feel that you're to find people with exactly the same issues that you've got. And actually, when you do, it does make you feel like, okay, yeah, I'm not the only one, you know, like I'm not the only one with a broken dog. If you're having a bad day, yeah, just reach out to us, because like I say, you are definitely not alone.
So I'll give you both of the Instagram account details, firstly for myself, so you'll find us at Tails Success, and you'll also find Bo at foxredlab_Bo, and that's spelled B-O. Karen, thank you so much for sharing your experiences. I know that you are not alone with pressures of coping with anxieties. There's going to be many, many listeners of this episode that will have found your story really useful. From me, just I wanted to say, keep being there for Bo and just carry on helping her live her best life. Thanks for joining us. Find out more by checking out talesofsuccess.com or search at Tails Success on your social channels.